Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to our holiday special here on Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network. This is a Drunken Cheese Stories episode for 2015. So go grab a beer or some grain alcohol, whatever you like, and listen up. If you're going to the bathroom and you're shy about drinking in your bathroom, it's okay. I drink in my bathroom all the time. I want to...
You too?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Great. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Got a beer going in the shower. Got a beer going when I'm indisposed. It's fantastic. Before I intro my guest today, I want to remind everyone out there to donate to the Heritage Radio Network. If you love this show and if you love food radio, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. So we rely on the support of our members and donors to get our food stories out there. Make your tax-deductible donation today. And we're so grateful for anything that you can give.
Yay.
Yeah. So.
It's the end of the year, right? All these like wealthy cheese lovers need their tax break.
There are wealthy cheese lovers?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they're out there somewhere.
They are. Yeah. I know one.
So today, I'm lucky enough to have a founder of Cutting the Curd and a very special lady, Ann Sachs, will be in the booth with us today.
Yay.
Thank you for having me. This is so great.
Having you on your own show. That's fantastic.
You're able to find your way here, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's so great, though. Now I don't have to plan. I just show up and Greg like says all the smart stuff.
Yeah. I just say what Emily tells me to say. We have Max McCallman, a man who needs no introduction, in the booth with us today. Thanks, Max, for coming and hanging out with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, brother. And then live, you know, on the phone from the Maximum Security Correctional Facility in Walpole, Mass. Matt Rubiner, how's that orange jumpsuit treating you there, buddy?
Looking sharp. Looking sharp.
Yeah, that's awesome. How's the cheese in prison?
It's all right.
Yeah. Very nice.
Gummit cheese.
Matt has some very fancy inmates with him up there. He's always like hobnobbing with Ruth Reichel in prison, you know.
Do you guys drink that fermented radiator beverage?
Security.
Yeah.
Sweet. So to start off our holiday drunk cheese story special. I'm not even drunk, and I can't pronounce anything.
Right, I'm never clear on the rules. Now, are we supposed to be recounting tales of Christmases past where we were drunk, or are we supposed to be drunk now while we're telling general stories about Christmas?
You're just going to listen, and I'm going to tell you what to do. That's how this is going to work.
Because I'm doing shots of Armagnac up here. Nice.
Can't you also, like, run a lawnmower on that? Is that, like, 260-proof booze? So I wanted to start with you, Max, and I was wondering if maybe you could tell me what, you know, because I want to reflect on the year in cheese and ask all of you what your best cheese moment was this year. What was your best cheese moment,
oh,
Max?
Oh, gosh. So many bad ones.
Those are good, too.
Yeah, but, gosh, I don't know. Too many to remember. Actually, the last cheese that I put in my mouth was the best moment I had, and that was just last night. I had an aged Comté from Marcel Petit.
Oh, yeah.
It was, and Emily picked it out, and she offered me a taste of it, and I had it last night, and I had more, and had a little bit more. And what made it so special was, I think, besides that she picked out exactly what she was looking for. Do you have any of that left? I don't know if there's any of that left at Italy or not. But
we've been selling it a lot.
I'll bet it's gone. It's only 80 pounds. How long does it take to go through 80 pounds at Italy?
About 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's right. So I guess I got some of the last of it. But it was sublime. And that was, I think that's probably one of the highlights Like I said, the last cheese I put in my mouth, and that was, I think that was it.
Okay.
It was the Comté.
Well, in the booth with us today, I want to say, Emily, the Emily Max referred to is our producer. It's silent gal, Emily Acosta. How are you, Emily? Just want to say hello.
Hello. I'm in here every week, but I like to just watch.
We got to get her liquored up so then she'll talk.
All good.
Oh, so my my best cheese moment. Oh, my God. That's like a really it's a really hard question. I mean, well, recent memory, we always do like a Saxelby staff potluck for the holidays to like, you know, get everybody in the good holiday spirit. And by potluck, we basically just like go to the store and like buy a bunch of stuff. And then everyone sits around the table at our windowless cheese cave and eats a lot of cheese. So, this year we did raclette, and it was really, really fun. I guess it was like my best and my worst cheese moment because I actually overdid it, which I feel like for me is pretty hard to do. I feel like I could put away more than like probably a half pound of cheese in a sitting. I mean, when it's like melted like that, and maybe not, maybe even when it's just at room temp. But I really enjoyed it, and then I felt really bad afterwards.
A little blockage.
Yeah.
Just a lot of blockage.
Just like I just went home and drank some Diet Coke, you know? Oh, I was like, I never drink Diet Coke, but I was just like, I need some bubbles, you know? Something's got to give. But another good cheese moment this year, I mean, I feel like I've been really excited to be working with Benton and Susan over at Crown Finish Caves.
Oh, yeah.
And their Paymaster is one of my favorite cheeses of recent memory. One of my favorite cheeses in general is Langres. And I feel like, you know, that like is getting there. You know, it's like approximating what I love about Langres. So that was a really nice,
I thought it was Langres.
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 And Beaufort.
Beaufort.
And Brebus.
Brebus.
Tom Brebus.
Tom Brebus.
Tom Brebus, the yokel.
I get a lot of requests for Asaggio. Let's give me some Asaggio.
Munchango.
What about you, Ruben? Are you eat a lot of Velveeta this year?
You know, no more than usual.
Nice.
No, no. Yeah.
Pound a week.
Wait, am I on?
You're on, buddy.
I can't get out of my head some of my worst cheese moments of the year, but I did have a couple of good ones. Yeah. My cheese moment of the year was my idol, because I'm geekish enough that I have idols in the cheese world, as I'm sure you guys do. But there's this,
you're my idol.
You're so kind. That's the grain alcohol in the bathroom talking. There's a cheese maker that maybe you recall from back in the day when we could import whatever the hell we wanted with impunity. But there's a cheese maker in the Loire Valley, Paul Georgelet.
Oh yeah, man.
Oh, just the best in the world. Just the best in the world. And you know, one of the things in the current regime that I miss the most. And he just absolute pure coincidence found his way to my shop in Granbury.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Unbelievable, with a couple of tidbits of the illegal variety. And man, I just miss that stuff so much. So that's hands down. I think rolling this big ass Emmentaler we just got up and down the street in the rain and cracking it open was pretty incredible.
That's awesome.
That's it.
What was your worst cheese moment, please? I'm sure you had so many.
Well, you know, you know more than anyone how much I love to be a judge at the American Cheese Society.
Yeah, man. That was
one of the great, great honors. I know you were there. I know Max was there. Anne, were you there? I can't remember.
I wasn't there. My daughter had the, you know, bad idea of being born on July 30th. Which is
going to
be a problem for me forevermore. Yeah. So unless she's going to get on board and come to the cheese show with me, or we're going to have to figure something out.
Yeah, wait till she's 23. Then she'll join you, like my daughter.
You know, and of course there's a lot of cheeses. And, you know, in my opinion, the entry requirements have probably been, you know, the bar has been, you know, removed in many cases. And man, we had a stretch of blues there that I was just doing my best. And to find something good to say, and you know, you come up, you're really stretching your powers of vocabulary to come up with something, and then what happened was, in an effort to counteract the string of really, really, you know, challenging blues, I overdosed on pineapple, causing, you know, and intense pain and sores that lasted for days.
Blue cheese and pineapple.
So I don't know if that's just a, you know, a bad palate cleanser story or a bad cheese story or what, but God damn.
And I mean, come on, Matt. You're complaining about getting the blues. Like, I got, like, low-fat chipotle cheese when judge.
Hey, look, I dream of low-fat chipotle.
I got a lot of, like, studded cheese, like Havarti with fingernail clippings. I got an interesting couple. No, the blues are tough, though, man. And I ate some of the pineapple off that cart.
You know, I have to I forgot. There was another great cheese experience that I had with Emily and others in France in September, where we went to a cheese shop in Annecy. And we had we had a Percier de Tigne, the real deal. And we also had a Bleu de Témignon, the real deal. And just to keep things interesting, we also include that little conical-shaped cheese from northern France.
The Dauphine one, or no?
No, this is the bad one. It's so bad you'll think it's good.
Yeah.
It's like it's like an afuego on a bad date.
Conde de Porto Brie?
No, it's gosh, it's got the,
it's got stuff.
It has
it.
The paprika
it's got stuff
on it.
In it. Yeah. What is that called?
Oh.
God. All right, that's your quiz.
That's your boulette d'aven.
Yes, exactly. That's the one.
Ding 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 ding.
We'll Matt, get you a parole win. Hearing for that one, dude.
Boulette d'aven.
That one out of.
Yeah, it is frightening. Man, everyone looked at me like, "Are you for real? Now, are you an expert here?" And so the people around the room, people did like the Percy de Tigne. That was a favorite. And the Bouche Chamillon, they didn't quite understand it, but it's still great. And that's I think those trips to France are worth every bit of it. So can't wait to go back.
Yeah, those are few and far between. And the cheese with stuff in it always gets me. Those little like molehills filled with garlic that people were always asking me for.
Oh gosh, Gaperon.
Yeah,
Gaperon.
You light that shit on fire. I don't know, man. That's just not good stuff.
Why do they do that?
I don't know.
Because it's made from skim milk.
Yeah,
there you go.
Just gotta jazz it up with something.
Right.
Yeah, it's just drained in a little basket. Yeah.
Well. Boulette d'Auvergne. That's interesting. I haven't had that in, well, I don't think I ever need to have that again. But you know,
maybe not.
It sounds
but
good.
It's got its place. You know, it serves a purpose.
Yeah, it does, actually.
I think so.
And I mean, like, I love the cheese with stuff in it that I love. Is like, I love, like, pimento cheese. I have, like, a real, like, soft spot in my heart for, like, pimento cheese.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No. It's so good.
I was surprised this past weekend. I was judging at the Pennsylvania Cheese Show, Pennsylvania Farm Show Cheese Contest, and there was a relative absence, of flavored cheeses. A lot of it was very, very good. And Pennsylvania is a big state, and so I'm looking for great things in the future. At least things that are available to us coming from Pennsylvania, because it has a history of dairying that is very long and a lot of success. Not just the Amish, but others too. And I can't tell you what the best in show was, but not until mid-January. So we'll come back and talk about that then. It was phenomenal. The cheese I used to carry.
That's awesome. So I wanted to throw another question out for you. We did a little year in review thing, and did you discover an amazing cheese this year? And if so, what was it?
Oh man! Well, I guess I kind of lumped that into my first answer. Paymaster was certainly
that
one
was your discovery.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. I'm trying to think of other stuff. Can I pass and I'll come back to me? I'm going to think of more cheese.
Sure, Rubiner. What did you discover this year that you liked?
Well, first, let me interrupt. I hope everybody saw me on yesterday's holiday special on the Barefoot Contessa with Ina Garten.
Oh, no, I didn't. I'm not allowed to have a TV in the hospital.
You fancy boy.
That's awesome. What did you and Ina talk about?
Anyway, it airs five more times before Christmas. What was the question?
No. Tell us about that. Tell us about that, please.
Oh, yeah, no. The Ina, as I call her, came up to the Berkshires to film her holiday special. Of course, they do it well in advance, and they have to do it during winter. They can't just come up and say July or something and do this. So they did it in February, and so we had to completely Christmasify the store and hang all sorts of baubles and things like that. And it was a reputable looking fake Christmas, and you know, it's I'm not usually very pleased with myself on TV. My voice sort of, or the radio for that matter, my voice sort of goes up, gets even more whiny as effeminate as acceptable but you know, my wife told me I looked all right, so that's all I need.
Your mom says you're cool, man. So what does Rubiners look like at Christmas time?
Oh man, this year we got the most brilliant, like, you know, this woman who does all of our, you know, decorations. She's just a, you know, genius with a capital G, but she does some crazy shit. Like this year she decided to paint all the this isn't going to do her justice, but she decided to spray paint all the pumpkins silver. And we got this giant ball made from pinoli cones that she found out west before they were extinct, and these huge boughs of tamarack and magnolia. And we have a wreath that looks faintly like the Grinch's arm hair.
Oh, nice!
And
I like a little Grinch hair.
I'll send you a picture.
I like it. I like it.
All right. I'm sorry. You had a question.
Yeah, what's your number, buddy? No, I'm going to go. So what I'm...
Well, you called me.
Oh, right. No, the radio station called you. I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed. I just let me talk.
My cheese discovery, was that what it was?
Yes.
I don't know that I discovered anything, but perhaps I rediscovered and are the cheeses from Ruggles Creamery in Hardwick, Mass. And I don't know if they trickle into New York. They usually don't trickle much outside of where. You know where where is?
Yeah, dude, I know where Mass is, hey.
So that's basically where it is. And the most stunning cheeses. I mean, absolutely perfect cheeses.
Just for those who aren't familiar, what are they called? What are they like?
You got to know the Ruggles cheese.
Yeah, I've had those over the years. They're very good.
So yeah, and they've just gotten better and better. They're all goat's milk. They all are you know, some sort of bloomy or ashy bloomy rind. One of them is raw milk and aged more. The Greta's Fairhaven, and it's just really, you know, as you would expect, really spectacular and complex. Like one imagines a much softer young kind of carocha to be. And then, you know, they have their one with a little line of ash, and they have one, speaking of flavored cheese, that has such a delicate line of herb in the middle. And I'm famously not a great admirer of flavored cheeses, but it's just so beautifully done and so delicate. And it's just a few goats and her, and she drives it here and there. It doesn't get too much outside of where. And it's so, the cheeses are just stunning. I mean, they're absolutely world class.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to shift gears a little bit before we go into the break, and I want to ask you a question, Anna. Can I ask you a question?
Oh, sure. Yeah, sweet. Ask away.
So on our first episode of the year, which was our 2014 recap, we talked a little bit about cheese regulation, and we've made some progress this year in 2015, which we talked about quite a bit over the course of the year on the show. But this past week, the American Cheese Society met with the FDA and just published notes from that meeting. Maybe you and Max could maybe summarize what was discussed in that meeting. Do you guys read up on that? Or
I read the ACS's response to the FDA regulation, which I thought was, like, you know, incredibly well written, and I'm happy that they're doing it, because somebody's got to stand up and do it for the industry. Also read Jasper Hill's response, and I know they sent out a solicitation for everyone to write their elected officials before the final, you know, public comment period was over. But, I mean, in my estimation, it seemed like FDA was basically targeting... I feel like they weren't... I don't know, the things that they were sort of targeting as being problematic were not indicative
not
of how our industry works. You know, it was very much kind of like on the outskirts, and in some ways also, you know, related to, you know, raw milk that was contaminated and not even necessarily cheese, you know. So I feel like hopefully the light has been shed that, you know, there's a lot of science that needs to be done to kind of, you know, prove all this stuff and reevaluate the 60-day rule.
What do you think, Maxie?
I'm really upset, actually. And I feel like I talked to Marianne Sikowski, who was in D.C. I talked with her a couple of days ago. She was the scientist representing the academic committee, or ACS, in D.C. with Nora Weiser. And her takeaway was that at least we put out our best effort. We have asked for collaboration. We've done that before. But we were also reminded of how they presented themselves at the last ACS conference. And we felt like, I can't speak for Marianne, but I felt like the ACS got short shrift. Instead of looking at evidence-based science, instead it seems to be looking at hysteria, and it's I trust the guys less and less. I'm sorry to say, but I'll just come out and say it. I think it's high time that we defend our right to choose the cheese that we want to. And I appreciate the efforts of the Cheese of Choice Coalition, but I think it does come down to individuals. They have to demand what is what they're entitled to, and that is raw milk cheese. We should not have to go to France, which I love going to France with Cheese Journeys or whomever. We should not have to go there to get our choices of cheese. These should be available to us. I think it's not just a luxury. It's not just we're missing out on some aesthetics and raw milk cheeses, but at the same time, I think we're also missing out on nutrition. But the bigger concern right now is that this could drive a lot of cheesemakers out of business in the United States. And I'm concerned about this. But we hope for the best. We always do. We're optimistic. And so we hope that the FDA will look at the ACS in a different light, that we are actually professionals and we do concern ourselves with safety because we actually eat the dadgum stuff ourselves. And so
we're all still here.
We're still alive, and we're all just skinnier than ever. And so it's
well, another important thing to acknowledge, I think, is just not the production of raw milk cheeses, but I think one of the important things that a lot of the respondents brought up was that a lot of this contamination happens post-production. There are instances of
raw or
pathogens, raw or pasteurized cheese, it's a post-production issue. And so then how do you address that? It's not just about making these traditional cheeses. It's about the whole supply chain.
Yep.
Can I chime in for a second?
Please.
I mean, you know, if we're talking specifically about the current the current absurdity over the non-toxinogenic E. coli or whatever it's called.
Yeah, accentuate that, please. Non-toxinogenic.
10,000 probable units or whatever they call it to 10 or something like that, which can only be achieved, you know, in the most industrial settings. And you know, absent what to me, and I'm no scientist, but absent what real scientists say is not real, you know, real science. Or at least that the FDA is making the decisions not based on the sort of refereed peer-reviewed research that should be driving these kind of policy decisions. You know, I just tend to be cynical and think this is just, you know, to a great measure, lobby-driven protectionist bullshit.
100%. That's how I feel.
And Matteo kind of said as much as that today in a quote. You know, the day they ban raw milk cheese is my last day as a cheesemonger. You know, we're trying to be the best we can be. We're trying to be world class. We're trying to represent these treasures made by artisans around the world. And I'll never, you know, as Judy Shad said to me a long time ago, never, ever, ever say that you can't make great cheese out of pasteurized milk. You absolutely can't. But the idea that we're trying to be the best at our craft, yet we're deprived even further. Not to mention the damage to the industry, but to be deprived further of, you know, what our stock and trade is. It's just, you know, what's the point? You know, every day you'll go to work and be serving up if not a lesser product, a product that could have been so much better. It's just real, real hard.
I think it's also just kind of a function of how government works in general. I feel like it's the fewer boxes to check, the better. Or, you know, let's at least make it all the box on a piece of paper that we can check. And so having a detailed knowledge of how the product is produced from animal to finished product to supply chain that's more work probably than they are up for at this point. Yeah. And so that's something that needs to be acknowledged as well. And in other countries, especially like France, the, you know, food safety people work closely with the veterinary people. And, you know, that's an understanding. And I think a kind of it's illustrative of how all these things are siloed, you know, in the United States. And that information needs to be shared.
Yeah. Follow the money. That's what I say. Just follow the money. Any legislation that gets passed in this country, you just follow the money trail. You know what? There's just financial reasons. It's a lobby all over. I agree with you, Matt, 100%. There's no people don't get it. The amount of people that get sick, which is like is minuscule compared to things that we don't lobby out. I mean, we can still buy. I know that this is so broad, but like we buy alcohol, we buy cigarettes, we buy eggs. We can buy eggs.
Yeah, we can buy raw fish.
Yeah,
sushi.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
okay.
The thing. You know, a bad raw meat, bad chicken. That'll knock you out.
There's something sinister at play here.
Yeah, there is, and there always has been.
So this is the part of the holiday show where we all start drinking. Is that the point?
Ho, ho, ho! So we're going to take a short break now while we all fire down a few rounds
happy
of shots
music.
And anger and listen to some happy music. We'll be right back.
Paying attention? Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000, anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org, click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. Since we're telling drunken cheese stories here with Ann Saxley, Max McCallman, and Matt Rubiner, I figured we should talk about cheese and alcohol pairing. We'll start with you, Max, since you have a whole app just for cheese and wine pairing, correct?
Yes, I do. It's free, available on iTunes. And so it has 130 varietals, everything from Albarino to Zinfandel, and only 180 cheeses, which, of course, is a fraction of the universe of cheese that are out there. But I'm waiting for images to come in from many cheesemakers whose cheeses I love. So it's a pretty big app, and it has about 3,500 pairings in it, and I recommend it. In the future, we'll have cheese and beer app and cheese and sake, cheese and whiskey, cheese and whatever.
Do you have, like, algorithms deciding these pairings for you, or how does it work?
Oh, yeah, it's very basic. If you're hungry and thirsty, it'll probably work. It's the easiest way to make cheese and wine pairings succeed is if you're hungry and thirsty. There's also that anticipation.
That's my philosophy.
Right. And in more cases than not, they do work. But it's not that complicated. The very basic principles of pairing foods and wines, if you're hungry and thirsty, if it's salty, it's sweet, and all that, those all come into play.
What's your favorite pairing right now, Max?
A cheese that I can't get right now, Cajun Aceitun, and a great Northern Rhone Syrah. It's one of my favorites in the world.
You can get some Zimbro. It's kind of like the Aceitun.
True. That's true. Yeah, but you know, I wonder, why can't I get the DOP cheese? I want the real deal. I mean, Zimbro's nice. It's lovely. It's very nice cheese. Yeah.
It's a good choice in a compromised universe. You know what
compromised,
I mean?
That's a word. Compromised milk.
Yeah. Nice. Matt, last year you Matt.
Beg your pardon?
Yes, yes. You mentioned vintage port and Stilton and Pasito and Castelmagno as your top pairings. Do you have anything amazing this year worth talking about or what?
I don't know. I'm in a weird state of confusion with pairings that I think probably a thorough examination of Max's app will help me solve. But, you know, I've been doing these wine and cheese pairing, you know, seminars, we call them, which are less about, you know, me telling people what goes with what, and more just kind of randomly throwing different, you know, alcoholic beverages at cheeses and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, I get so confused these days, not just with the pairing of you know, say, wine and cheese or beer and cheese and stuff, but, you know, the increasingly, you know, elaborate, you know, iconoclastic pairings that, you know, people are, you know, proposing with cheeses. And I get a little lost in, like, well, you know, what do I even mean by, you know, a successful pairing? What do I mean when they go great together? Do I mean that they you know, we start with the assumption that one is going to affect the taste of the other, you know, and are we hoping that one doesn't, you know, just damage the taste of the other one? The two just leave each other alone? Or are we looking for this, you know, as I think we are most of the time, this, you know, emergent flavor to arise from the pairing that, you know, is neither of one nor of the other? And that's what I think we're shooting for. But so often, you know, in that emergent flavor is so strong, I feel like I've lost the cheese a little bit, or I lost the wine, which I used to think was just awesome, and now I sort of question it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Of course it does.
And then there's some weirdo things that we've been doing that just, you know, just that are absolutely wrong. You know, we always have a blue in our tasting slate, and, you know, we're going to be pairing that blue with five different wines because we're pairing every wine with every cheese and see how it goes. And, you know, the ones that aren't supposed to work, these like, you know, like some, you know, lean, like Macon, you know, Bordeaux or Sancerre or something that we pair with, you know, some fiery, you know, really ripe blue, and the pairing is like, at that very moment, it's like stunning, and it's like, yeah, the wine is destroyed, but it brought out every single thing you want, you know, out of the cheese. Really points up the moldy character, and you know, if you were coming at it from a wine perspective, and this is another kind of complicating factor, if you were coming at it from a wine guy, you'd say, "Jesus, that's a horrible pairing because it wasted the wine." But, you know, I come from it from a cheese component, I say, "Geez, that thing really stripped away all the chaff from the cheese and really brought out exactly what I wanted out of the cheese." So, you know, I've been doing this for, what, 22, 23 years, and I'm just as lost as I was the day before, or the day I started. Well, anyway, any of that make sense?
Not a bit of it, but nice. But really, thanks a lot for that, though, really.
That's the Armagnac. The Armagnac talking.
That's comforting. It's comforting to know. Well, me personally, I mean, I'm just coming off of, well, I mean, sort of, having two kids. Like, my daughter is a year and a half. And my son just turned 3. So I feel like, hey, if I can drink an alcoholic beverage and feel good and not feel like shit the next day and have a piece of cheese, I feel great. Because for a while I was so freaking tired. And, you know, it's like one little sip of anything, I got a headache. So now if I can enjoy a beer and a piece of cheese, I'm really happy.
Matt, you're right. It's like to be told that this works with us and have these pronouncements going into an event where you have a cheese paired. Cheese number one paired with wine number one. Cheese number two paired with wine number two. Well, maybe that works for you, but it doesn't work for me. There is that level of subjectivity that comes into play. That's why I like to mix it up. When Emily and I were in at the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival last October, she was speaking about the Italian cheeses, and I was just hanging out. And I said, let's taste the wines first, give them their due, and we'll try these ranges of cheeses and invite people to discover for themselves what works for them. And again, in more cases than not, they do work pretty well, which is great that they do blend nicely together.
Well, I'm mandated by the state, by about 10 states, not to to have any alcoholic beverages right now. It's a condition of my parole. So I'm pairing cheese.
You got to come up here to Walpole.
Yeah. I got a lot of friends up there in cell block D. It's a great cell block. But I when I do have those two things, I always like we started doing it at Italy, and we do it a northern Italian like exploratory class, a bunch of Robiola, and we always finish it up with a blue. And so 200-day Gorgonzola, Gufanti 200-day Gorgonzola, and Barolo Chinata are, like, incredible. Mm-hmm. And they produce this, like, sort of marzipan aftertaste that just makes me so happy.
That's what you look for, those marriages made in heaven.
Yeah.
The cheese is enhanced, the wine is enhanced. 1 + 1 = 3.
And it also, we get a bunch, in those classes, we have some people who are afraid of cheese. You know, Italy is like a place where people come to.
They're all over the place.
You know, and it, well, there's like a, the learning center there is great, but you know, they get a lot of people from all over. So you get a lot of people who give it as gifts or people they don't know as much. And a lot of people are deathly afraid of blue cheese. And so we come to the end of the plate and they want to taste it. And they're like, I'm not going to eat it. But usually I've gotten them drunk enough so that they'll be like, ah, screw it. I'll eat whatever you give me. And then after they have that pairing, which is the chinata is like medicine, basically. It's like, you know, it's like herbal tincture of like Barolo grapes and herbs. And it's... But they love it afterwards. It's a fantastic way to finish the cheese plate, I thought, you know? Oh, I love you guys.
After blue, the only thing that's left is sex, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have the blue cheese, and where do you go after that? And that's one thing. I think that Americans have really overplayed the pairing thing. I think it's a little too much. I think it's not that complicated. Do you agree, Matt?
It's like, it's I do. Really that- absolutely. I mean, I think it's fun, but it's kind of just what I was saying. You're piling on so many flavors that you're really, I think you're just kind of, in so many cases, lost what you started with.
It's a good way to make money having cheese classes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We should do a cheese and sexual positions pairing class later. How about that? How does that sound? Oh, no takers? Come
That's
on.
A different Heritage Radio Network show. What?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to get thrown
out. Hold on.
Here.
I got to take this other call.
We're going to get in one more question in here because I wish I could keep you guys here forever because I love you. So what are we looking forward to in 2016 for cheese? And I want to start with you, Max, because you have an announcement to make to us. Is that not correct?
What?
Yeah.
No, it's
Max McCallman, not Matt Rubiner.
I'm going back to the Artisanal Bistro.
Really?
Yeah. So I've been asked to go back and help it become an exciting cheese destination. And it already is a cheese destination, but I want to be able to do more than what I did when Artisanal opened in 2001. I want to be able to make cheese exciting. And speaking of sex, I want to help sexify cheese the best that I can because cheese does continue to have a bad rap, and so my goal is to present cheeses differently, to do something exciting, and try to do it in a way that's not done the way it's done everywhere else, it'll give me a chance to play artist with cheese a little bit more. Not to say that there aren't a lot of artists. I call them artists that make some lovely cheese displays, and that's all well and good. And cheese makers, of course. There is artistry as well as craftsmanship that goes into cheese making. But what I intend to do is help Artisanal with the new owner. By the way, it's not Terrence anymore, but Sarid Drori. The new owner of Artisanal, he has grand ambitions to restore Artisanal to its glory as a cheese destination, and that's I feel like it's the best use of my talents in the coming year.
That's awesome, dude. That's really awesome. I worked with you there in 2003,
and I loved it very well. You worked very well with us. Yeah.
That was a great time.
Maybe you can come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll talk.
Oh, nice. Solicitations.
Not
I like
so
that.
Top secret dealings. I'm cutting the curd. I like it.
If you're my employer, don't listen to this. No. What about you, Anne? What are you looking forward to?
Well, in the very immediate future, I am very much looking forward to a trip to Vermont. In January, we're going to take the whole crew from Saxel Beaches up to Vermont for a long weekend, and we're going to visit, of course, Jasper Hill and Twig Farm and Plowgate Creamery and as many other places as we can fit in along the way, and just have a nice little trip out of the city. I feel like, again, since I've had kids, I haven't had much of a chance to get out and visit producers and do that kind of thing. So I'm really looking forward to that. And also looking forward to just seeing what people are coming up with. I feel like there's some real up-and-comers making some great cheese. And recently we tried some stuff from like Sugar House Creamery, for example. I'm excited about them. They're awesome. And just seeing, you know, more people getting into it and getting us some good cheese.
How about you, Rubes?
I'm looking for a year of continued solvency, which will hopefully allow me to finally uphold my annual New Year's resolution of getting the hell out of these hills for here and there and scrounging around the country for cheeses and visiting these places. But, you know, the old ball and chain of the store keeps you down sometimes. So trying to get to Europe more just to poke around and, you know, trying to really just get my arms around, you know, my American cheese buyer went and, you know, had a kid some time ago, and we've never quite recovered while the American, you know, the sheer number of great American cheeses has exploded. And I just don't even know what's in my backyard anymore sometimes. So just got to get out there.
Matt, we can send you some cheese. It's cool. Just okay. Give me a buzz.
Hi. Anyway, yeah, that's me.
So I'm going to ask one more question of our silent partner, Emily Acosta. What do you want to do, Emily, for cheese in 2016? What are you most looking forward to? And welcome on the show, by the way.
Thanks. I don't like to talk on the show.
But we like you to.
You're out of control. I'm just looking forward to more cutting the curd. This is so much fun to be here every week. And hopefully more cheese travel. This year was the first time I got to really travel for cheese, and it was amazing and eye-opening, and I hope I get to do more of it in 2016.
Nice. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, wait, Japan. I wanted to explore Japan.
You for cheese
that's
or just in general?
For cheese.
Yeah, for cheese. We were actually thinking about doing a Cheeses of Asia series in the new year, so...
Asia's hot.
Yeah,
yeah.
The
fastest growing per capita consumption of cheese is occurring in Southeast Asia right now.
And the show right before ours is Japan Eats here on the Heritage Radio Network. And
with Akiko Katayama.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. you guys have done a sake and cheese pairing class, I believe. Or mm-hmm. Yeah. So
more than one. Yeah, sake and cheese. It's the new frontier among many. Yeah. Paired with American cheeses, too. The excitement that's occurring in the cheese world today, as we all know, is occurring right here within our shores. And it's partly because we don't have those restrictions that prohibit us from taking liberties with standards of making. So we don't have to follow the precise methods of making, which have their advantages, too, in some cases. But if we want to make something like Comté, we can make it, but... use a different breed of cow besides Montbéliard, and it's good to see that that we have that opportunity to mix it up, and that's what is leading to the great diversity of cheese. So looking forward to 2016, I'm looking forward to our trip to Oregon in March, which is going to end up at the Oregon Cheese Festival. I think it's March 16th or 17th. Oregon is right up there with Vermont, the excitement that's occurring in the United States right now. Of course, every state in the Union has an artisan cheesemaker now, even Alaska. But actually, there are probably more in Alaska than there are in places like southern Florida. But it's not that surprising, actually, when you think about it. But I'm excited to see new cheeses, and I hope that I get to judge at the ACS conference again this year in Des Moines.
I'm sure they'll do that for you. Well, for me, I just like to be selling cheese, doing what I love, doing this radio show. If the lovely folks at the Heritage Radio, you know, don't fire me for indecent exposure back here in the radio booth, you know, I don't know. Hopefully, I'll be back for another season. And yeah,
just there is that big fish tank window out to the dining room. It's tempting. It's tempting. It's tempting, Greg.
I just want to do a one pantsless show. Come on. Well. Well, so I want to say thanks so much for everybody for tuning in, and thank you to our superstar guests, Ann, Max, and Matt. Thanks so much, guys, for coming on. If you can't get enough of us and need more Cutting the Curd in your life, we're taking over Heritage Radio's Instagram this Friday and Saturday, December 18th and 19th, so be sure to follow us at Heritage Radio and follow us while you're at it on Cutting the Curd Instagram. So take care. Happy holidays.
Thanks, Emily.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.